Listening to Prairie Public right now, so I bet you're a bit of a news junkie, right? But do you also like music? Well, I bet you do. Prairie Public is the place for that too. Did you know that we have a guy named Mike Olson who spins adult album alternative music during the week?
There goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play.
He's got an endless library, limitless musical knowledge, and a clever way of handcrafting sets of songs. You can listen to Prairie Public's Roots Rock and Jazz stream on an app or a smart speaker pretty much anywhere, and on an HD radio anywhere in the region. Check out Mike Olson on Prairie Public weekdays from 9 a.m. to 10 and noon to 6 p.m.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a moment, Dave Thompson and I will review this week's news. Dave, of course, is our longtime veteran news director, and we will walk through this week what's happened in the North Dakota legislature. And since it is Thursday, that means that Matt Olean and I will go to the movies for his weekly movie review. Today, Matt reviews The Substance, a body horror film that stars Demi Moore. And we begin Main Street today with Chanel Willer. She's North Dakota's Homeless Continuum of Care Coordinator. Welcome to Main Street, Chanel.
Thank you, Craig, for having me today.
It's a pleasure to visit with you. I want to talk about a grant the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has awarded, a $3.3 million competitive grant to North Dakota's Homeless Continuum of Care to support the work of nonprofits, public housing authorities, and governmental agencies that provide housing and support services to people who are experiencing homelessness here in the state. And let's start there. Chanel, if we could, define what homelessness means here in North Dakota.
So in North Dakota, it looks a little different than it does in other parts of the country. When you think about the encampments and the tent cities that you see in the more urban areas like Los Angeles and Phoenix, North Dakota is different. We have a lot of hidden homelessness in North Dakota. Unfortunately, a lot of those individuals are sleeping on couches. And so when we look at the federal definition of homelessness for our program, those individuals do not technically count as homeless across our state. Those that are sleeping outside in their cars, abandoned buildings, if they are in a hotel that's paid for by a nonprofit or a church, religious entity, those individuals are counted homeless. Same with individuals who are in an emergency shelter or a domestic violence shelter. Those individuals are also counted as homeless. But those individuals that are couch hopping from place to place to place actually don't even count as homeless with our program.
So we have then a $3.3 million grant that's been awarded to the state. How can that make a difference? And what is the role of the grant to support these entities that I listed just a moment ago?
Yeah, so the point of the grant is to get people housed. So the continuum of care funding does not actually fund like emergency shelters or those hotels or motels that are paid for by the nonprofits. What this grant pays for is permanent supportive housing, rapid rehousing, and supportive services so that we can get individuals off of the street into their own places and then provide them with those supportive services to help them stabilize so that they don't return to homelessness and that they are able to continue and then take care of their mental health and their physical health and find a job or get an education. And so it's those supportive services that are really important as part of the funding that we receive to help individuals be successful once they are housed.
One thing that I wonder about is I think people often associate homelessness maybe with what they see in Fargo and maybe perhaps Bismarck and some of the larger communities. But in fact, it's an issue, isn't it, statewide?
It is an issue statewide, and it goes back to some of that hidden homelessness that we see. North Dakota, you know, has a lot of hidden homeless, but it is an issue statewide. We have students experiencing homelessness, and that is part of a program through the schools, the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction. So we see students in Williston and Dickinson and all over the state that are experiencing homelessness as well. So it well, it's maybe a little more visible in Fargo and Bismarck. We know it exists everywhere across North Dakota.
So how then is this money distributed? Do nonprofits come to you? Do public housing authorities come to you, or do you reach out to them? Do you try to spread the grant dollar, so to speak?
We try to spread them as far as we can across the state. So when HUD comes out and says, HUD releases a notice of a funding opportunity, at that point, we as the Continuum of Care launch a competition, if you will. And so we hold a application process. Agencies can apply for the funding. And then we have a rating and ranking committee that reviews all the applications and makes those decisions on how and what agencies should get funded, what renewals should be granted. If we have a low performing agency, maybe we need to reallocate some of those funds to another agency, to a new project. And so we go through a whole process of a competition and rating and ranking review. Once we're done with that, the North Dakota Continuum of Care has a board that is made up of individuals across the state from each region. And then we have a full membership. And that full membership is about close to 200 members from nonprofits across the state. And so once the rating and ranking committee has made their decision and reviewed all the applications, they will then present that funding recommendation to our board for approval. And then once the board approves it, we take it to our full membership for approval. Once the full membership approves it, then we submit this whole collaborative application and a priority listing to HUD, and then we wait for them to tell us what's going to be awarded and what's not. So sometimes we get bonus funding that some years we receive it and some years we don't. It just kind of depends on the scoring from HUD and how they decide to move forward with it. So yeah, we've got that $3.3 million right now, and it's spread across four regions of the state, and then we've got some that's actually statewide right now.
When I think about the cost of housing and I think about the size of North Dakota, I wonder if $3.3 million goes very far. Does it?
No. We spread it as far as we can. I will say that 30% of that is also dedicated specifically to youth homelessness. In 2021, North Dakota received the Youth Homeless Demonstration Program grant. And so 30% of what we receive, and that amount is just a little over $1 million, is directly for youth homelessness. Now, youth homelessness for this particular program is youth under the age of 25. So 24 and under is who that grant specifically serves. But no, it doesn't go very far when you think about the cost of housing. And one of the other barriers that we see a lot of our individuals face is their credit history, their criminal backgrounds, their eviction history. That's a barrier that a lot of times they have a difficult time finding housing because of those backgrounds. Sometimes landlords don't want to rent to individuals that have that kind of background. So that's the other barrier that we see a lot in trying to find housing for individuals. Simple answer is no, it doesn't go very far.
We're enjoying our conversation with Chanel Willer. She's North Dakota's Homeless Continuum of Care Coordinator. Chanel, what's the trend of homelessness here in the state? Is it getting worse? Is it flat? Is it maybe improving?
It's getting worse.
And then the next obvious question is why?
A number of things. You know, the economy is not great. The price of groceries are going up. The cost of housing is going up. Unfortunately, the wages are not increasing to keep up with all of that. So we're finding that people are struggling more to maintain their housing because the cost of everything else is going up. And so they're having to choose rent or groceries, gas or groceries, all those different decisions. And what bills are they going to pay and which ones are they going to let slide because of that? So maybe they're letting their utilities slide this month to cover rent. So not having that increase in wages to keep up with the increase of everything else is really showing people are having a difficulty keeping up. The other thing is our elderly population is on this fixed income, a lot of them on Social Security. Well, again, when your rent is increasing, because many of them are renters. They are not actually homeowners. So when that rent is increasing, but their Social Security isn't, it's causing them hardships to stay in their housing.
Are tribal governments able to take advantage of these programs?
They are, yes.
How do they do that here in North Dakota?
Same process as everybody else. We have to go through a process because tribes are a sovereign nation. They do have to sign a resolution with us to be included in the geographic area of North Dakota for continuum of care funding. We do currently have one tribe that has done that, and so then that allows them to apply for the funding. To date, we have not actually had any tribal entities apply for the funding, but I would love to work with some tribes and get them some money as well.
Is this something that only nonprofits or other agencies can access, or can individuals and families who are currently experiencing homelessness maybe perhaps directly or indirectly take advantage of this money? And what should folks do who find themselves in this situation if they've never been in this situation before?
So they cannot, we as North Dakota Housing Finance Agency cannot help individuals directly. That's why the money is distributed to agencies across the state. So that's where they can access those funds. The one thing that we are required to do with this federal funding is have a coordinated entry system. And that coordinated entry system is to help streamline the process for individuals who are at risk of losing homelessness or are currently homeless. And so that coordinated entry system brings them into an access point within a community. And through that access point, they can then go through the process and potentially have a warm handoff to another agency that has the funding. You know, there's a couple different funding sources in North Dakota that can help. So there's not just the continuum of care, but there is also the Emergency Solutions Grant and the North Dakota Homeless Grant. All of those funds are distributed to agencies across the state. And so by doing that, and then that coordinated entry process, it's really to just help individuals so that they're not having to call multiple agencies to try and find assistance, but rather getting them to one spot that can help them. And then maybe they need to be directed to another agency that has some particular type of funding. Maybe they aren't currently homeless, but they're at risk of losing homelessness. So there might be an agency out there that has homeless prevention dollars to keep them from becoming homeless. And so it's that system is created to just, like, again, streamline everything to help individuals so that they're not having to retell their story at every single agency that they talk to.
We've all heard, and I'm relatively new to the state, but even when we were investigating moving here, that there's a lack of affordable housing here in North Dakota. And does this at all in any way provide any light at the end of that tunnel, especially for folks that are fiscally challenged and on the edge of becoming homeless or find themselves as homeless?
Unfortunately, this particular funding does not help in building those affordable rental units. So we provide the rental assistance for individuals. Now, there are other programs within the North Dakota Housing Finance Agency that can help actually build those affordable units. I'm not privy to all of the information, sure, but we do have other programs within the state agency that does help with building those affordable units. It is definitely an issue across the state and really across the nation. Affordable housing is kind of a big issue everywhere right now. It's not just North Dakota.
Do you have any programs or grants out there on the horizon that will assist you, like this HUD grant of $3.3 million that you've received? Anything on the horizon that you're chasing or hopeful for?
So there was a grants opportunity this past fall called COC Builds. And that was to help build permanent supportive housing in the state. We did apply for that. We were allowed to submit one application for one project, and that was the same with all continuum of cares across the nation. Every continuum was allowed to submit one project. We applied for that with a project in Fargo, and we're just waiting to hear from HUD whether or not that will be granted.
Chanel, how will you, I guess, examine how this money is used and whether it's made a difference and whether this money was well spent?
We collect data through a homeless management information system. And so during that annual competition that we hold, and then also I monitor all of my projects on an annual basis. So in looking at the annual competition and the data from each agency that submits an application during that process, and then also looking at their data for their project that is currently being monitored, we can see what is happening and we can see who's exiting to positive housing destinations, who's returning to homelessness. We have system performance measures that we have to submit to HUD on an annual basis as well. And that also tells us how many individuals are increasing their income in the program, how many are staying housed for up to, I think the system performance measures look at 2+ years is the highest that we go. How many are returning to homelessness within that 6 months, 6 to 12 months, up to 2 years? And so we have ways to measure all of that to make sure that we are using the funds appropriately and helping the individuals that need to be helped, our most vulnerable people in the state.
Are there places in North Dakota that get this right when they're trying to help homeless folks better than others? And how then is that information and education, I guess, shared?
Yeah, we have, the agencies that we are funding, they're fantastic at what they do. And they're the ones that are on the ground doing the work every single day. So again, just using those performance measures, we can look at who's succeeding and who's not. If we have an agency that's really struggling, we have conversations with them. We can get some HUD technical assistance to help them improve on what they're doing. And so we have implemented that a couple of different times across the state. We also hold monthly trainings. So that's something that as a continuum of care, we try to hold monthly trainings on different topics of best practices. So trauma-informed care, motivational interviewing skills, domestic violence, secondhand trauma, and how the individuals who are doing the work can take care of themselves so that they can continue to do the work and not burn out, because that's a really big issue for social workers everywhere, is that burnout, because there's high numbers of clients that they are working with. There's a lot of trauma that they're working with, and that trauma can impact them as a social worker. And if they're not taking care of themselves, then they are, they're not able to help their clients. So we provide training to help our agencies improve. And there's always some that are, a little bit better than others. But honestly, for the most part, the agencies that we're working with are doing fantastic work across the state.
Besides money coming into the system, what else can be done to support homeless folks?
Oh, well, education is a big one. I know sometimes, we often have this mentality of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and that's not always the case. That's not always the easiest thing to do for individuals. So it's educating our community members on what homelessness is and what it looks like. It's not because people are always addicted to drugs or they have mental health issues. That's very high. Both of those are very high within homelessness. But it's educating yourself on how you can help, people volunteering, going to the shelter and volunteering, taking meals to, or volunteering at places that provide meals, helping cook the meals and serve them. Get to know those people and understand that they're people just like you and I, right? They just have fallen on hard times. Maybe they do have a substance use disorder. Maybe they do have a mental health concern. But when you think about an individual who is every night trying to think about where they're going to lay their head, the last thing that they are thinking about is how can they improve their mental health? How can they get help with their substance abuse disorder? Because I have to think about where I'm going to sleep tonight. I'm not really sure if I'm going to be outside or if I'm going to have somewhere safe to be that night. They're also thinking about where they're going to get their next meal. Sometimes when you take places like Dickinson or Williston, where resources are really limited, and we have the Fargo and the Bismarck where there's more resources available, right? So those people in those smaller communities don't have the resources. They don't have a shelter to go to. So they are constantly thinking about where their next meal is coming from and where they're going to rest their head that night. So that trauma prohibits them from thinking about anything beyond those two things. So again, thinking about their physical health or their mental health, it becomes very difficult to do that. And so educating our community members on what homelessness is and what it looks like is really important. And if anybody would ever want to have that conversation, I'm more than happy to talk to anybody about that. It's that education. That's probably one of the biggest pieces that I would recommend for individuals, is just learning more about what homelessness actually is.
And Chanel, I would just extend that just a little bit. There are people who are listening who may want to volunteer, but find what you've just said as kind of scary. I don't have the skills. I've never done this before. I wouldn't know what to say to help someone who has mental health issues or has addiction issues. My point is that there are people that can help you learn how to be a volunteer.
Yes, absolutely. And the people that are working at those agencies day after day after day are more than happy to help teach you how to interact with individuals that we may be a little uncomfortable with, right? Like, I remember as an elementary student, I was in 4-H, and we went and volunteered at a group home for mentally disabled individuals. And I remember leaving there and being a little bit scared because I was a young child and it was a little unnerving to me. But if you continue to work with the people that you're interacting with and you continue to work with the agencies, those agencies are thrilled to have people come and volunteer with them and teach you. And you can learn from that. And it's a great opportunity, not just for an individual to volunteer like that, but also for a family. So I have taken kiddos to serve a meal at a shelter in the past, just to expose them to that so that they not only appreciate what they have at home, but so that they understand that not everybody is as lucky as they are.
And I think what you said is so important earlier. It's not homelessness here in North Dakota is not always visible. It may be a little bit more of a problem than any of us even realize.
It is, yes. I teach some dance classes to young girls, and I had a conversation with my class just a couple of weeks ago about being kind to everybody, because we don't know that other student that maybe doesn't have the best clothes or, you know, maybe might smell a little funny. We don't know where they slept last night, and maybe they don't have a shower that they were able to take that morning, and they don't maybe have a place to wash their clothes, and they most certainly don't have the money to buy the brand name clothing. And so being kind to everybody, because we don't know what their story is and what they're dealing with in their home life, is so important for all of us.
Thank you for that advice. My guest has been Chanel Willer. She's North Dakota's Continuum of Care Coordinator. Wonderful conversation, Chanel. Thanks for joining us today on Main Street.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Coming up on Main Street, Dave Thompson and I will review this week's news, in particular all that's happened in the North Dakota legislature. Plus, Matt Olin and I will go to the movies. His review this week is the movie The Substance, which stars Demi Moore. That's all ahead on Main Street. Stay with us.
Prairie Public is a listener-supported statewide radio network. We cover everywhere in North Dakota, from the Bakken to Bismarck, Wishick to West Fargo. But we wouldn't be able to bring you NPR news, news from the Prairie region, and all the great cultural and music programs you enjoy without the help of listeners like you. And so, we would like to send a special thank you out to our sustaining members, whose generous monthly contributions keep Prairie Public's radio stations and online streams humming along with quality programs and independent, fact-based journalism. Thank you, sustainers. We simply can't do this without you.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather round, everybody.
It's our time to get together with Prairie Public's veteran news director, Dave Thompson. Dave, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you, Craig. Good to be here.
As we've started the last several Main Streets with you, Dave, the biggest surprise this week in the North Dakota legislature, from your perspective, was...
I don't know if there were any really big surprises or little things that made me kind of shake my head a little bit. But I think that the idea that there's only one bill still remaining regarding education savings accounts, I think that that was a little bit surprising too.
Educational savings accounts have been debated across the country. People are very concerned about what it means to public education to allow residents to get a significant amount of money to privately educate their kids. What's the latest then?
Well, that is the concern, and that seems to be a real worry among legislators who are on education committees that say, wait a second, you know, we need to, and we have a constitutional duty to fund public education. So they're saying, we don't want to take anything away from public education. And there was an interesting comment by some Western North Dakota legislators saying, hey, we've got good schools because our teachers are good, but the buildings look horrible. So we really need some money. So we're not too keen on this education savings idea.
Will it pass, Dave, ultimately?
I'm not sure it will. I think there's mounting opposition to it, but there still seems to be a group that really wants to see it happen.
Dave, there was some sad news this week in the North Dakota legislature. Representative Josh Christie from Fargo passed away.
Yeah, at 43, very young person. He was one of those people who was just, he quietly went about doing his job. Everybody seemed to like him. He was very bipartisan in his approach. He's a Republican. But the Senate Democrats told me that they asked him for some help about AI, and he's big into AI. And they said, you know, we got training from him for AI. So he reached across the aisle and did a lot of things there. He was well-liked, and it was just an underlying medical condition that caused him to die at age 43.
Really sad news. Dave, student-athlete eligibility was an issue this week. A House bill failed relative to that question, but the matter's not finished. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is that the bill did fail, but the North Dakota High School Activities Association is taking a look at it now and trying maybe to remove this one-year probation for students competing in varsity sports after they move to a new school district. And they're probably taking their cues from what's happening in college sports right now with those transfer portals and things like that. So I expect that we're going to see the NDHSAA have some very strong discussions on this coming up.
Dave, the House voted to end approval voting in Fargo. This is an issue that just impacts Fargo. Describe first what it is and what the legislature hopes to do.
Okay, what approval voting is basically if you have a number of candidates for an office, you can vote for as many as you like. And the idea is whoever gets the most votes wins. Now, this was an initiative led by Fargo residents, and they did that because they had a couple of races, I think they were in Fargo City, where they had like four or five candidates for one seat. And so they had approval voting, which said, okay, some people may not approve of this, some people may, and then the person who gets the most approval would win. And the opposition to it is that they say that it destroys the idea of one person, one vote. There's an argument to be made for that, but again, there is local control. The citizens of Fargo voted to do this through initiated measure, but now the state has stepped into it and said no. But this is one House only. The Senate still has to look at it.
Dave, the House has rejected what was called the kingship resolution. First, let us know what that is, and what was the motivation behind the resolution?
Well, the motivation behind the resolution is come from this Christian nationalism is part of that. But the idea is that they did was going to pass a resolution acknowledging that Jesus Christ is king. But there was an awful lot of opposition to it, saying what you're doing is trying to establish a religion. And then Representative Austin Schauer from West Fargo had a very interesting take on that. He said, why I don't like this, this is one of those gotcha bills, because if I vote against it, then maybe my opponents would say, oh, he's not a Christian. But it did fail on the floor.
Dave, the Senate has rejected a bill that would have allowed a casino to be built south of Grand Forks. And this was an effort by the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa to build a large gaming casino. First, Dave, why was it rejected? And secondly, does this end the question? Is this something the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa can pursue on their own?
I'll answer your second question first, because I did happen to talk to some people. The governor actually has some say over what is tribal land, and he can expand the compact to allow this construction to take place. But, you know, there was some concern by some people who said this is an expansion of gambling. You're going to have this casino out there, and it's going to be sucking money away from charities who have run charitable gambling, and it's going to be just kind of like a little Las Vegas. I know that there was some real interesting discussion on this, because I listened to the discussion. It was revealed during the debate that they have partnered with Caesars to build this casino south of Grand Forks. Supporters say this is to help, you know, Canadian traffic, because Canadian traffic, they're going to other casinos, and maybe you get people out of Grand Forks who might spend a weekend at a resort type place and, you know, throw some quarters at a machine.
Dave, what do you anticipate happening next week in the North Dakota legislature that's top of your mind?
Well, it looks like maybe there will be a vote in the House on the Comprehensive Property Tax Reform Bill, and Representative Nathy, who's kind of shepherding it, says he does expect it to pass in the House, and then the Senate will take a look at it. But he says that they're confident that people want property tax reductions plus property tax reform. That's why those three caps are in there, the 3% caps are in there. He said he thinks it's going to pass with that. And of course, you're going to raise the primary residence tax credit to $1,450 from $500. That's a big selling point, too.
Dave, the folks in Devil's Lake have gotten the go-ahead to now drink their water again. What's the latest?
It's a very complex question, and really they lost their water on Monday, and it apparently was frozen pipes, and there are some old pipes in Devil's Lake. And actually it caused not only, you know, a lack of water supply, the water that was in there was not treated. So they finally have lifted the boil order. That was lifted today, and water is flowing again free, because they've got everything kind of solved for the moment. But Devil's Lake is sure that they're going to be doing some major water line replacements. And that is an issue all over the state, because you've got those old lead lines. They're trying to get rid of the lead lines and get to a more modern type line. So we're not going to see it in Devil's Lake. You're going to see other cities that are going to be doing some major replacements of lead water pipes.
Dave Thompson and I review the news each and every week here on Main Street. Dave, again, it's been a pleasure having you today.
Thank you, Greg.
Listen to Asian View from NHK World Japan Radio every weekday on the station to hear international news, interviews, and deep analysis of what's making headlines, with a spotlight on what's happening in Japan and elsewhere in Asia. From the latest stories coming out of China, North Korea, and Myanmar, tune in to Asian View from NHK World Japan Radio and stay up to date with a region that's playing an increasingly important role.
Listen to Asian View weekday afternoons at 5:44 Central on Prairie Public.
There's the fanfare. It's Thursday. That means one thing. It's time to go to the movies with our great friend Matt Olie. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Hi, Craig.
Matt, the New York Times described this movie as guts and gore and nudity galore. The movie is The Substance. Let's listen to the trailer.
People always ask for something new. It's inevitable. At 50, well, it stops.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA and will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
I'm Sue.
You're hired.
Let's go.
A perfect balance of 7 days each. The one and only thing not to forget. You are one. You can't escape from yourself.
There's been a slight misuse of the substance.
This balance is not working!
Would you like to stop? Would you like to stop? Would you like to stop? Would you like to stop?
I'm fine. Everything's fine.
You have to cut through yourself! Old fat disgusting!
People are gonna love that.
All right, Matt, we've heard the trailer. What did you think of The Substance?
So this is a film I missed last summer when it came out. And, of course, since then, as you know, Craig, the horror genre is not my favorite genre. It's not something I don't go to Hellraiser and Chucky movies and things like this, as a lot of people do. But I missed it this summer. And then suddenly, to my surprise, an effective Oscar campaign began for the movie. And it's up for Best Picture, Best Director, Demi Moore for Best Actress. I think it's going to win the makeup Oscar for sure. So I wanted to see this finally because it's up for all these Oscars and review it. So this is a fascinating movie directed and written by Coralie Farget, who's a French filmmaker. And it is ostensibly a message movie about body image in Hollywood with actresses and women. Because Demi Moore's character, Elizabeth Sparkle, is like a fading actress who has this aerobics workout show, and she's fired. She's fired like in the first couple scenes of the movie because they want someone younger. And there is a black market substance called The Substance, hence the name of the movie, that's a black market film. This is a horror movie, by the way, a horror body image movie. And it's a black market substance that's supposed to give you an alternate sense or alternate being of a younger self, to make yourself younger. But it's not that simple, right, Craig? Because if it was that simple, it would be a 10-minute movie. But it's a 2-hour, 20-minute movie, which I think is too long for this movie, honestly. And with any horror movie, there's going to be complications, right? Otherwise, there's no movie. What those complications are, as she tries to create a younger self, the younger self is played by Margaret Qualley as Sue, which is kind of this alternate version of Elizabeth. The side effects and crazy complications are crazy, and I will just say they are nuts and gory and bonkers, especially the last act of the film, which I think is the best part of the movie, is the last 20 minutes gets completely bonkers. Now, I would say this movie also, and younger fans will not know what I'm talking about, I would say this movie is a picture of Dorian Gray meets Sunset Boulevard, meets kind of those older Bette Davis movies, like Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. That's kind of what this is about. It's sort of this disfigured, be careful what you wish for, which is the line from Dorian Gray, you know, where the person wants to stay young his whole life and has this magic, you know, serum to stay young his whole life, even though the picture of Dorian Gray always ages. And so I think it's kind of an homage to those kind of movies disguised as a message movie. And the message is that body image in Hollywood with women is not a good situation. I don't know if the message effectively gets through by Coralie Farget. I think she hammers it over the head with kind of a sledgehammer rather than, I would say, a scalpel, the more subtle. But it's a horror movie, right? So the horror fans want the gore. They want the over-the-top stuff. Demi Moore is very good. There's a fantastic scene she has in front of the mirror when things start to go crazy. And she commits to the role. I mean, she's 62 years old. And in the bathroom scene, we see all of Demi Moore. Full frontal nudity, everything. And so she really commits to the performance. It's a brave performance. I'm not sure I had it on my bingo card for 2024 that she would be possibly an Oscar winner for this movie or ever an Oscar winner. That's just not the career Demi Moore has had. She's good in the part, Craig, but I don't think she should win Best Actress. I don't think this is an Oscar-winning type role, especially when compared to Mikey Madison in Anora and Cynthia Erivo in Wicked and Fernanda Torres in I'm Still Here. But it's an original movie. It's an original screenplay. And I think it's a film that should be seen. I just don't know if it's a horror masterpiece, in my opinion. But again, it's not my genre.
We remember Demi Moore in Ghost, A Few Good Men. Is this her best performance?
Well, it's certainly her most Oscar-type, Oscar-bait-type performance. Let's just say that. But I don't think anybody thought a horror movie released in the summer would have this kind of Oscar legs, but certainly they have run an effective campaign for Moore. Her Golden Globe speech when she won is probably going to help her. And whether she wins or not, it's tricky to get a sense on who's going to win Best Actress because Mikey Madison got the BAFTA the other night, which sometimes is a predictor. We'll know more when the SAG Awards come out later this weekend, Craig. But they've run an effective Oscar campaign for her and for the movie. I just don't know if this is a Rosemary's Baby, Exorcist, Shining-type masterpiece that we'll talk about 20 years down the road. It's hard to say. The makeup is the star. I mean, the makeup on Demi Moore with her hands and her feet and her body and her face is phenomenal. And it really becomes the star of the movie as the movie goes on and becomes kind of this Sunset Boulevard, Dorian Gray, later career Betty Davis type movie. That's what I think the movie really is. But as I said, the body image message is there. I just think it's a little over the top with the messaging in terms of the directorial style of Farget. But it's a film that should be seen. It's available to be seen now, streaming. It was in theaters last summer. And I'll give, you know, Farget credit for you know, making an original movie with an original kind of message.
So, Matt, the film's ending has been described as both shocking and also thought-provoking. And without giving away any spoilers at all, how did you interpret the conclusion?
Yes, I would say it's a shocking final 20 minutes. Can't go into too much detail what it is, but there's a lot of people involved in that final 20 minutes, and it's crazy and it's bonkers. And the final shot of the movie is more the thought-provoking shot, I would say. And I think, you know, the final shot of the movie, I think, works. I think it sticks the landing effectively.
What do you think the ideal audience might be for this movie?
Again, I didn't see it in the theater, Craig. I saw it, you know, recently on Amazon Prime, so I don't know how people reacted to it in the theater. But I do know that horror fans have liked this movie. A good friend of mine, Travis Jensen, who's a huge horror fan, kind of thought like I thought. It's good, but I don't know if it's a masterpiece type situation. So I think a lot of horror fans are excited that it's getting Oscar recognition because, as you know, Craig, horror movies do not win Oscars. They just don't win Oscars usually, except for maybe makeup and things like that.
All right, let's go on to Oscar trivia. Matt, of course, as we talked about earlier, Demi Moore has never won or been nominated for an Academy Award despite her acclaimed performances in films like we said earlier, Ghost and A Few Good Men. Which co-star from Ghost won an Oscar for the performance in the film?
Whoopi Goldberg won Best Supporting Actress in Ghost.
We've been to the movies with Matt Olean.
This is Bird Note. Glenn Albrecht grew up in Western Australia, where he became enamored with birds.
But one bird in particular, the grey fantail, would come very close. In fact, sometimes would land on my grandmother's head and steal some of her hair. And for the rest of us, it would come close, it would fly around our heads. It's an acrobat, so it can tumble and twist and turn. And as a child, I thought that this was such a special bird because it felt like it was directing its attention to humans and to me in particular.
He later learned that these acrobatic flights allow the fantail to catch insects.
And it wasn't until I became a more serious bird lover and bird watcher that I read that the grey fantail does this special bonding and acrobat trick to anyone that enters its territory. And it turns out that it's just using me as a broom, or as an extension of its own fan, to get more insects up into the air so that it could catch them.
As he grew up, Glenn witnessed how coal mining devastated the Australian countryside and the birds that lived there. He's since become an environmental philosopher. He's developed a new vocabulary to describe human relationships with the natural world. Glenn wants to expand the human imagination about our future on Earth, honoring the kinds of connections he built as a child with the gray fantail.
This bird was inviting me to share its world. All I had to do was pay attention to it.
Learn more about Glenn's work on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Nick Byard.
This is Dakota Datebook for February 20th. The first automobile in North Dakota sparked a wave of excitement when it appeared in Fargo in 1897, igniting the state's love affair with cars. In 1898, Samuel Holland's homemade steam-powered jalopy became the first car manufactured in the state. North Dakotans didn't wait for mass production. They started building their own vehicles. Some, like Holland, sold their creations, while others, like William Walton of Neche, built them for personal use. When Henry Ford's Model T hit the market in 1908, it sold for $400, equivalent of about $11,000 today. While some skeptics saw the horseless carriage as an impractical novelty, the automobile craze quickly gained momentum. By 1905, North Dakota passed its first traffic law, setting the speed limit at 8 miles per hour in towns and 25 miles per hour on the open road. Pedestrians and horse-drawn vehicles had the right-of-way. On this date in 1926, the Bismarck Tribune announced North Dakota's first-ever car show, set to take place the following month in Bismarck. The event was already shaping up to be a major attraction. Originally expected to draw a smaller crowd, interest soared as details were released. 33 cars from 18 manufacturers, valued at over $100,000, would be on display. All brand new 1926 models. 10 Bismarck dealers were involved in the planning. Along with the cars, exhibitors would showcase accessories like radiator caps, bumpers, jacks, and stop signals. Dealers planned special displays featuring trucks and radio equipment in their own showrooms. The event promised more than just vehicles. Entertainment included an orchestra, a fiddling contest, and dancers. The hall was to be decorated with flags and bunting. The newspaper predicted it would be one of the biggest events of the year, and it proved to be no exaggeration. More than 3,500 people paid 25 cents each to attend. Local dealers saw a surge in showroom traffic, and everyone involved in planning was thrilled with the results. It was clear, North Dakota's love affair with the horseless carriage had officially begun. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
Families of migrants sent to the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, try to gain information from each other on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
And that's a wrap for today's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. Remember, you can hear this and all past episodes of Main Street at our website at prairiepublic.org or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, it's The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. His topic this week, remote versus in-person work. And at 7 p.m. Central, it's Science Friday with Ira Flatow. From all of us here at Prairie Public, we hope you have a wonderful North Dakota weekend, and we look forward to seeing you again Monday, right back here on Main Street.